BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dennis Norden, Dillis Powell, and Frank Muir. Round one tries to test their vocabulary. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words approximately right. We begin with Anne Scott James. Anne, what is podagra?
Pod, something to do with a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Big foot, painful foot.
Mm.
It's a foot disease called gout.
That's absolutely right. Podagra is gout. It rather literally means something that catches you by the foot, which is fairly literally true, I think. Frank Miller, what is the meaning of solidungula?
Solidungula. Eula is having the characteristics of being similar to solidung. It's artificial fertilizer.
On entirely wrong tack, and I can't give any marks, and I'm very sorry. It means solid hoofed, like a horse rather than a cow.
Ah.
Equine, if you like. Now, to this power, what is balneology?
Something to do with a hydro, kind of.
Yes?
Thing. Something to do with water,
mm-hmm,
and baths.
Yeah, what to do with them?
Science of baths.
Yes.
I have a bath for that in your science.
I think that'll do it. It's the scientific study of curative baths and medicinal springs.
That's why it's the Bishop of Bath and Well.
It's absolutely right, provided there are curative wells. Dennis Norden, what is the meaning of cribe reform?
Well, it means shaped like.
Yes.
And I'll take half a mark for that. And I'll come back next week. Shaped like cribe. Cribe. Would it be short for the Caribbean?
Like a, not like a cradle, is it? No.
But getting...
Shaped like a cradle.
No, it's not right.
Good.
No.
I get by with a little help.
If you think what Moses' cradle was made of, it might help you.
Oh,
bulrushes.
Bulrushes.
Was it made of bulrushes?
Yes.
Rush-shaped.
No, yes. I'm sorry, I've slightly
told misled. Told us too much, we haven't got
right,
it.
No. Oh. No, I've misled you a bit. I give Dennis his half mark for knowing it was shaped like something, but what it is, in fact, is having small holes like a sieve. It's mainly used in botany and anatomy, and comes from a Latin word just meaning a sieve, just like that. Well, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the two women members of the team to go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the programme I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden, your quotation is, money is the root of all evil. And Dillis Fowle and Frank Muir, yours is, eureka. And then at the end of the programme I shall ask Dennis and Frank to tell me how these came to be said or written. The second round is a round of odds and ends, 2 marks for correct answers. Anne Scott James, all the Greek gods had chariots when they needed them, which were drawn by special kinds of creatures. For instance, Bacchus was drawn by panthers or pards, and Diana was drawn by stags, and Pluto, the god of the underworld, was drawn by black horses.
He was drawn by Walt Disney.
What I'd like to know is, what creatures were the chariots of Juno and Neptune drawn by?
Juno's were drawn by peacocks.
Absolutely right. Well done.
Who was the other?
Neptune.
Potted well, the underwater stuff.
Drawn by...
sea serpent.
1.5 out of 2. Anne Scott James is quite right. Juno's chariots were drawn by peacocks. They were one of the sacred birds, including geese and ravens, who were attached to Juno. Neptune was drawn by seahorses, because he was god not only of the sea, but of horses as well.
That was not clever of us, was it?
I think potted shrimps is much nicer. I can't give any marks for it. 1.5. Frank Miller, where would you find Molly Seagrim, Sophia Weston, and Lady Bellaston, and what had they all in common?
Common's a good word. They can all be found between the sheets of Henry Fielding's novel, Tom Jones.
Yeah.
And they're all the ladies he encountered in his picaresque journeys.
That's absolutely right. These are all characters in Fielding's novel, Tom Jones, and what they all had in common was Tom Jones himself. Well, now, Dillis Powell, Dillis, what is the liberty of the press?
Well, short of blasphemy and treason.
Yes.
And libel.
Yes.
To make critical remarks, attack anything you please.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Two marks. Dennis Norden, who was Casanova?
Casanova was an Italian.
Yes.
Who lived in the 18th century and wandered Europe in search of a little peace. Which, and then he wrote his memoirs all about them.
Giacomo Casanova de Sango, who was an Italian adventurer, and he wrote these very extensive memoirs, and very frank memoirs too, and they describe his rogueries and adventures and loves in nearly the whole of Europe. That's
the
Casanova.
Best translation, if you want to get a copy, is by Arthur Machen.
Yes. And then we have a round of verse and poetry, and what I do in this round is to give each member of each team a quotation and ask them to try and complete it by the next line or two. Two marks if they can finish off the quotation, and two more for correctly naming the source. Anne Scott James. I met a traveller from an antique land who said...
This is Ozim...
Yes. Mandias, King of Kings.
Yes. Yes, written by...
Oh, that's a nasty one, isn't it?
Well, he was one
it's
of
not
the...
Byron, is it?
No. Contemporary.
Well, wait a moment. That leaves us a choice of...
Shelley.
Yes, we've got that half of it. Can you go on with the quotations? Well, I met a traveller from an antique land who said... And he describes what he saw.
He describes the Sphinx, doesn't he?
Mm.
He describes...
Well, you invented.
Well,
out Shelley.
There's this big thing in the desert. And I kept standing outside it saying, here, puss, here, puss. only put poetic-like, you know, as they do.
I think 2.5 out of 4. It's a poem by Shelley called Ozymandias. I met a traveller from an antique land who said, 2 vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half-sunk, a shattered visage lies whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command, etc., etc. And it goes on, finally, my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. But there wasn't very much left. 2.5. Frank Muir. There was a sound of revelry by night, and Belgium's capital had gathered then.
Eve of the Battle of Waterloo.
Yes, quite right.
The ball.
Yes.
And somebody wrote about it, didn't they?
Yes.
This is what we've got to find out. Fanny Burney wrote about it.
She did, but in
she
prose.
Was there. She wasn't asked to the ball, but she was in prose.
It's a very long poem. This is only one episode in it, and...
Is this sort of canto for the
Yes, that's it. That's what I want.
We think it might be Byron.
Yes, quite right. Do you remember the poem?
Hmm?
The actual name of the poem.
Don Juan in Brussels.
No. They're rather more juvenile than that.
Child Harold.
Yes, I helped a bit here. I'm not quite certain what to give you. 2.5 again, I think. It's Byron, the Eve of Waterloo, which Frank got quite right, and it is in Canto 3 of Child Harold, and it runs this bit. There was a sound of revelry by night, and Belgium's capital had gathered then her beauty and her chivalry, and bright the lamps shone o'er fair women and brave men. Now, Dillis Powell, weave a circle round him thrice, and close your eyes with holy dread.
For he on honeydew have fed and drunk the milk of paradise.
Well done.
And it's Coleridge, it's Kubla Khan.
Well done. 4 marks. Now, Dennis Norden, the wild vine slipping down leaves bare, her bright breast shortening into size. The wild vine slips with the weight of its leaves, but the buried ivy catches and cleaves.
I think it's Swinburne.
Quite right.
Now, is it the long one?
Yes.
Well, good. It starts, or somewhere up near the beginning, is The Hounds of Spring are on Winter's Traces.
Absolutely right, yes. Title?
Atalanta in Caledon?
Caledon.
Caledon. Right.
Well done, Dennis. 3 out of 4. You haven't got the next 2 lines, but that's jolly good. Swinburne's Atalanta and Caledon. This is a chorus from this long poem. This particular bit goes, the wild vine slips with the weight of its leaves, but the buried ivy catches and cleaves to the limbs that glitter, the feet that scare, the wolf that follows, the fawn that flies. And now we have a round of initials and abbreviations. Again, 2 marks. M. Scott James, small letters, lowercase, QV. Full stop between each. QV.
Oh, something vide, isn't it? Quad vide or videte.
Yes.
QV page something rather. Means look on page 44.
Yes, that's all right. Well done. 2 marks. It comes from Latin quad vide, which means which see, that you can find a cross-reference to it in the textbook or encyclopedia which you're studying. Fankner. The R, capital R, the R months.
They're the months in which we eat oysters. In other words, you don't eat them in the months without R's.
Which are? I'm sorry, which?
Yeah.
Which?
Well, April, May, June.
Not April.
Well, I say, I don't pronounce R in April. May, June, July, August, Sept. May, June, July, August.
That's it. Absolutely right. Never eat an oyster unless there's an R in the month. 2 marks. Dillis Powell, G-Man, capital G. G-Man.
G-Man, that's something to do with America.
Mm-hmm.
Something to do with the sort of federal police.
Federal
Bureau
yes.
of Investigation.
That's right. And who are these chaps in it?
They're the tough ones who go out and shoot people.
They cross state lines.
They cross state lines, Frank says.
1.5. And G-Man is a government man. He's an agent of the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. In other words, he's not employed by one of the states, but by the central federal government. And they're the chaps who are supposed to look after particularly tough and big kinds of criminals. 1.5. Dennis Norden, capital M.
Monsieur. M. Monsieur.
If it has a full stop, it's there, but without a full stop.
Oh.
Ah. Oh, then it's Latin.
Yes,
it's Latin.
Something in chemistry, is it?
No, no, Dennis is right.
Latin for 1,000, isn't it?
Absolutely right. 2 marks. Well, now we come to the last round and go back to those 2 quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. For 2 marks, Anne Scott James, can you give me the origin of your quotation? Money is the root of all evil.
I must say, I always thought it was the love of money. This is interesting.
Yes? You're right.
It comes from the Old Testament, I think from the Psalms.
No, not Old Testament. At any rate, I'll give you something for that. No, you're quite right about the original.
There's a song. There's a very syncopated song which goes, money is at the root of all evil.
That's right.
Can you sing it?
Yeah,
I have no voice.
I think you'll get it 2 marks. The original phrase is, the love of money is the root of all evil, which comes in St. Paul's first epistle to Timothy in the Bible, but then, much, much later, there was a song written by Alex Kramer and Joan Whitney called Money is the Root of All Evil, but the phrase, or more or less the phrase, also occurs in Samuel Butler and Erewhon. 2 marks. Tillis Powell, can I have the origin of your quotation? Eureka.
Well, it's a Greek story. There was somebody called Archimedes.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough, it was Archimedes, and he's alleged to have said, Eureka, I've found it.
And he was sitting in his bath, studying balneology.
Well, now I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Dennis Norden and Money is the Root of All Evil.
I have to make a rather uncomfortable confession here. I wasn't very bright when I was at school. I was 14 before I discovered that the dictionary was in alphabetical order. I spent 3 weeks once looking up the word zoological. I don't think... It's funny, you know, these things happen with children. I think it dates back to the first day I went to school. My very first nursery school. I was led into this strange room with all these strange children by this strange teacher and sat at a strange desk. And the teacher said, all you have to do is sit there. And all you have to remember is, if you want to be excused, put your hand up. And I remember thinking, will that stop it? And because we sort of got off to this wrong start, school and I sort of fought it all the way, and quite regularly, term after term, bottom of the class, maths papers always were sent home, you know, Frankie and Johnny written on, because, you know, they just got tired of writing, he'd done them wrong, you know. You see, but the point about the English scholastic system is that you can't beat it indefinitely, because there comes a time when you have to go in for a thing called the A level in order to get into university, you see. And I saw that I didn't have a chance. You see, first place, I still am actually temperamentally incapable of entering any examination. In my whole life, the only test in which I ever got more than 70% was with a breathalyzer. And so this A level presented quite a problem to me, and I thought, well, there's only one thing to do, that's pull up my socks and get down to some really hard, laborious, grinding cheating. That was the only other subject I was any good at, you see. Now, I'd established some rules for cheating, such as always sit behind round-shouldered kids, you know, you can see over better. And I thought, what I'll do is I'll sit next to somebody who's bright, you see. Well, now, I knew who I was sitting next to because you went alphabetically, you see, and so N, and there was this chap whose name began with M, and he was a swot, you know, he was a real sort of teacher's pet, you know, but not, we had a teaching machine as well there, and at the end of the term he used to bring it a lens cleaner, you know. And so I thought, I'll come to a financial arrangement with him to copy his paper, you see, which I did. And I gave him my cricket bat, my 3-speed motorbike, my copy of Casanova's memoirs, translated by Arthur Machen. He never forgot that. Isn't that strange? £10 a week for life. And in return for that, he let me copy his paper. Now, it was an absolutely foolproof scheme, and there's absolutely no reason why today I should not have been a graduate of Oxford or Cambridge, or possibly both. Except I was overzealous, you see. I over-cheated, as it were, because when I say I copied every word, I copied every word. So that my papers went into the examiners with Frank Muir written on top. Nevertheless, I would still say that to pass any examination easily and painlessly, there is no substitute for bribery. Or as the song has it, money is the root of A-level.
Entering Dennis again next year, and then moving over entirely to science fiction. I hope you'll do better. And now back to Frank Muir, and if you remember, his word, rather than quotation, was Eureka.
The other day, the second hand fell off my watch, and I wandered into Virginia Water, the nearest village, to buy another one from a second hand shop. While I was there, it started raining. And I had a cap on. So I took from my pocket my new plastic cover to stop the cap getting wet. And as it was, the cover was new, I didn't want to get that wet. So I put the evening paper I bought over that. And I realised I didn't want to get the evening paper wet because I hadn't read it yet. So I popped into the public library until the rain stopped. And in order to stop looking at the girl behind the counter, I picked up a book and browsed through it. And the book was entitled All There Is to Know About Ancient Greece. And I read it. So I thought I'd tell you in the 6 minutes all there is to know about ancient Greece, because this chap comes into it, you see. Do you know that nothing is new, you know? The Greeks had it all. Disc jockeys. You know, Socrates was the first disc jockey. Because apparently he used to hold little gatherings called disc horses. So he must... There was... he had a friend, Diogenes. He was a barrel of fun. And there was a... And, of course, there was the ruler at that time, the great conqueror, Alexander, you know, and he was so tired of people just sort of burning their fires on the floor and letting the smoke get through the ceiling that he invented this thing of putting it up on a little thing of bars of iron, and so you got better draft. And even now, I mean, Alexander the Great, his name is remembered and revered, but possibly the best of the inventors, the inventor's inventor, the one that they all looked to invent things, was their friend Medes, like the Medes and the Persians, this fellow Medes. Now, he was busy inventing a rather silly device, rather like an enormous screw, which you lowered into a little stream, and you turned it, and it sort of carried water high up and deposited it for irrigation purposes a few feet higher. And he was playing around with this thing all day, and used to get filthy slopping around in the mud. They used to call him Aki. Anyway, Archimedes used to get home at night and always had to have a bath, you see, to get all this muck off. And Aki used to have this bath, and he used to notice that when he sat in the bath water used to come up. And when he got up, it used to sink down. Surely there's an invention for me here, he said to himself, in Greek, which is even clever. And he wondered whether there was anything to do with the weight of his body. So he thought, if I could, I know my own weight, which was 15 stone 2. They were a portly lot, you know, those philosophers. And if I could measure how much water I displaced, so he thought to himself, now, if I fill the bath to the brim and put a whole lot of pots and things round, and I lie in the bath, and it all slops over the side the way it does, and I measure how much water is in the pots, perhaps there's a correlation between my weight and that, which is what he did. Now, Alexander the Great was terribly kind, and he helped all these philosopher chappies, you see, and because they had no money. You can't make any money inventing screws. So he'd given Archimedes the room above the stable, the royal stable, where Alexander kept his racing chariot. And the floor was of mud. I want you to bear that in mind. The floor was of mud, you see, and the bath was above that. So, and also that although the normal 8 inches of water in a bath weighs about 300 weight, if you fill the bath right to the top, it weighs about 9 ton. Well, Aki filled the bath right up to the top, you see, put all his amphora and vases and jugs all the way around the lip of the bath, and in he dove. There was an almighty splash and a tidal wave. And the water not only went into the amphora and the jugs and the pots, but slopped all over the clay floor. Well, of course, what happened? You can guess. The weight of this 9 tons of water, plus Aki, 15 stone, do your own sums, if you will. Well, the whole lot descended into the stable beneath, and the bath crushed down, completely destroying Alexander's racing chariot, which was a tall, noble vehicle built of cloth of gold and leather and wood, It didn't go very fast because the wind used to catch it. The bath fell right on top of this, demolishing it and lodged twixt the two wheels. Of course, there's a terrible commotion, cries of uck, 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 which I believe is a Greek expression for oh, oh, oh. And Alexander came rushing out and said, what is happening therein, within the royal stable? And Archimedes looked at this thing. There was the two wheels, and there was this low bath between them. And he said, I have invented the first really efficient racing vehicle, because it's low slung, it's streamlined and white. It's an E-type chariot I've got. And Alexander opened the doors and saw this mess and saw Uckers, Starkers. And he said, what's this? What is this thing here, this white thing? And Archimedes said very proudly, sir, you're Ica.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, by your vote, Frank Muir wins the contest of the two stories, but nevertheless, Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden win the entire contest, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.